Production. Recorded live.
Welcome to episode 31 of the Geocaching Podcast. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about geocaching along a route. If you want to participate in this conversation, we will open up the phone lines at a later time in the show. Go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. There's no need for a PIN anymore. Dial in, and you can connect right to us. But if you want to chat with everyone else who's in the chat room right now, go to TalkShoe.com, and you can download the client, and you'll be able to see the chat that's going on behind this podcast. So, Daryl, since we last talked, it's been quite a long time. We didn't have a podcast last week because I was doing the video editing project, but I did get a chance to – I was up in Michigan, just over the line from Indiana. I was at a wedding, and I got a chance to hit a few caches on the way home from the wedding. And then this past weekend, we went out and hit two on Sunday, too. The thing that I found weird about the one that was on Sunday is it was actually on a playground, and it was I climbed into this playground and realized that there was something kind of funny. There was two bolts in this playground that didn't go to anything. So I started unscrewing the one, and lo and behold, there was the log inside of it. It was impossible to get out, but that's where it was at. So, and I also, it was, I guess, a kind of a thing for me, I went ahead, we placed another cache this weekend, so I'm actually starting to enjoy placing caches a lot more now, so I'm continually looking for a place to place a cache. What have you guys been up to?
Oh, well, 2 weeks seems like so long.
A couple
weeks ago, we actually did our first power caching attempt to Chicagoland area. Got 62 finds in 14 hours. Not as good as we had hoped, but we didn't hit a single LPC. Bunches of micros in the trees, but not too much in the way of power caching materials. So we did it as a power caching trip, but only ended up with 62 in the 14 hours. The next day going home, we got 31 finds. So
that's
we
not
were
too
doing,
bad, though.
Yeah, but we did a better find rate on the way back home than we did when we were in Chicago. And then we recorded the Caches of the Roundtables, Episode 3, so that's going to hit the feed in a couple of days. And went to Early Halloween Geobash, which was GC13RTR, and that's a blast as usual. It's just a small local event. But this year we set up a little photo studio, a little portrait studio on site, and did live portraits, printed them right there, put the little logo and some text on it, and it was a blast.
That sounds like a lot of fun. What all was involved in the early Halloween geobash? Like what all did you guys do at the event?
Well, let's see. We had the closest to the pin competition. They had a contest for the best costume, a contest for the best snack, which only one snack was entered that was actually themed, so that one won. Last year they had a whole bunch of really good entries. Unfortunately, this year they only had one entry. And we had about 60 people. They had the usual silent auction kind of thing, the raffles. They had a couple of games that I didn't participate in. Actually, let me see if I can't get Firefly to jump in real quick, and she has a little bit more info on that.
Well, one of the games that we played was kind of a story theme, where Son of Cyclops actually read us a story. We were broken up into groups of four, and we had no more than six groups. And on the back of each tree, he had questions from the stories, and then you had to answer the question written either A or B. Down on the ground by the tree was a film canister. Inside the film canister, if you got the right answer, was a number. The person who was at the tree had to run back to your group, so there was only one person out at a time, getting the numbers for the final stage. Once you got the final stage, everybody ran to get there. So the faster your team answered the questions and got each number, the faster you were able to get to the end of the last stage. Once we were at the last stage, we were looking for a small coin. It was well hidden, and there was, like I said, it ended up that everybody was there searching for it, and we still needed another hint to find it. But it was a lot of fun, and so the person who found it at last was the one who found it. What was really nice was it was mostly whoever found the coin, not necessarily who got there first looking for it. So we had a lot of fun. We had some scrapes and bumps and boo-boos, but that's only because we were digging around in pine trees where it wasn't actually in a pine tree.
All right, Dale, are you – this? I think this brings us to our main topic of the night, caching along a route. First thing I'm going to touch on a little bit is what is it and why would we want to actually do it? Well, caching along a route is really good for, let's say, if you're going to a certain either event or going to, like, your sister's house or your friend's house or somewhere that doesn't live close, or even if they do live close, what it is it allows you to get a pocket query of caches that are a certain amount of distance from the route, the roads that you're going to be driving on the way to your place, like you're going. So like any other PQs that you run, the pocket queries that you run on geocaching.com, it's mainly for, or it's only for premium members. You can only do it for premium members. Oh, I was just also reminded that another good thing it is for it is it's also good for hiking and biking trails too, that the caches might be placed along too. So since this is for premium members only, I would definitely suggest that you guys go out, and if you don't have a premium membership, go ahead and get it. It's only like something like $3 a month, $30 a year, fairly cheap, but I would definitely suggest it because there's lots more things like this that you can do that you can't do without the premium membership. So Daryl, where do we go from here?
Well, you're going to need a GPX or KML file to start your process, and those have to be less than 500 miles or 500 points in the route itself. So that does limit you a bit, and quite frankly, you probably wouldn't want to go over 500 miles anyway, because that's going to limit you to about one cache per mile, because pocket queries are limited to 500 points as well. And there's a whole bunch of programs to do that, but Google Earth is a great one. Did you want to go into how Google Earth works?
Sure, I'll do that. Google Earth, if you have not seen it, it's a really cool program. You can basically view the Earth, like satellite pictures and or pictures from an airplane, aerial pictures of any place on the Earth. But it also allows us to do routing too. If you download it for free, and it's for Linux, Mac, or Windows, and the link to get it is http://earth.google.com. So we're going to use that in conjunction with the creating our route is what we do is we click in Google Earth, we click the directions tab, which is along the left side of the window, and then you enter an address to a from address and a to address, so where you're going to go and where you're coming from. You click on the little magnifying glass there, and it finds the route, and it will highlight it for you in the on the Earth there on the little map of the Earth, and then you right click the route and you say save as. And here's the important thing, that you need to save it as a KML file. Then you can save it as other options too. There's a KMZ file, but you don't want to do that. You want to save it as a KML file, and you want to put it as a place where you can remember it at, so that way you can find it later when you're going to go ahead and upload it. Speaking of uploading, Daryl, tell us how uploading works.
Well, it's a little bit different than anything we've done on geocaching.com so far. First, from your account page, you'll want to go to the Find Caches Along Route link down the right column. And then you're going to see another page come up, and it has an option for upload the GPX/KML file. Click on that tab, and then browse to find the file, and it's like any other file location dialog that might come up. And then if it goes well, you should be able to click on the upload button and get the GPX KML upload information page with your route and checkbox to the left of the route. Now, one of the things that we've noticed is there seems to be a little glitch every so often that your route doesn't actually load up correctly. So before you mark save on that, make sure to take a look at that, review your route a bit, and make sure that that is actually the route that you wanted. Otherwise, you might end up with a route that doesn't want to go away.
Yeah, I actually found that out today. I was I was taking a couple of screenshots for our website, so you guys can see how to do this on the website. And I uploaded a KML file from my house to Daryl. And when I uploaded it, everything uploaded fine. And it said it's 100 and something miles, however many it is from here to there. But it said that it had no turns on it. So I guess that means I have to go as the crow flies. But when I tried to delete it because it wasn't right, it wouldn't let me do it. It just stayed there. So I'm either going to need to try it again later to delete it or contact Groundspeak and see if they can take care of it for me.
Yeah, and last I knew, this is still in their beta mode. So they don't guarantee that you're not going to run into some problems. And I'm sure if you do run into problems, they're going to want to know about that. But once you've got your route in there, you know that that's the one you want. Select the checkbox and hit the Save Selected Route button. Then you're going to come up with a bunch of options to make the route public or create a pocket query. And you can change the name of the route. If you're coming out of Google Earth, the default is to use this big long name that has where it's, the route starts and where it ends. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't especially like big long names for my pocket queries. So I'll change that to something a little bit more descriptive, like, you know, route to home, route to George's house, something like that. And then
now,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things that you mentioned was marking it public. And one of the things that's kind of cool too, I haven't found a whole lot of routes where I'm going to go, but you can search and see if someone already has a route. Like if you're going to go from, you know, Indiana to Oregon or Illinois or wherever, you can see if someone already has the route made public. I have not ever in my experience found those work for me, but there is that option.
Well, and that where that really is handy is for the rail trails. You'll find a number of the rail trails. People have uploaded those as KML files or GPX files so that you can go and just pick a file and create your pocket query to do that route, and that's really handy. We also are looking at doing the Route 66 caching this summer, and someone has been nice enough to take each state and make each Route 66 through those states into its own route file. So we can grab those and create our own pocket queries right from that file.
That's nice. I never noticed that it the Route 66 one. That would be helpful. That would be great.
And there's going to be more and more of those, I'm sure, popping up as people become more and more familiar with the routes. And because it is using just about anything to create that, you know, a GPX file, a KML file upload, it's entirely possible that you can go in with whatever software you want to use, create routes off the tracks on your GPS. So if you had a really cool route, you can go and pick that and upload that for someone else, essentially.
That is true.
Oh, yeah. Getting back to this, though, you'll see the list of the routes, and you have the option, as we were saying, to make that public or create the pocket query and to edit the name of the route. But why don't we just go ahead and save that file on the web page and try creating our pocket query. You want to take over there?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. To create our pocket query, now you just click on the Create Pocket Query, and for the most part, you'll see things that are mainly the same that looks just like when any other PQ that you create from the geocaching.com website. You're going to get a chance to name your pocket query. So, I would definitely name it something you're going to remember, especially if you do a lot of pocket queries. You don't want to get that in your email and not remember that, oh, yeah, this is my trip to Indianapolis. No, you're going to want to name it something you know, like Indianapolis or wherever you're going. Then you're going to select the days for the cache to run if you want to create it more than, or the pocket query cache to run. So this is helpful if you want to do it more than just once. But if you're just doing it once, mark it on the day that you want it to be delivered to you. And then also select the frequency, obviously how often you want to run the PQ. And then here's where it differs from the other PQs that you do. You select the distance from the route up to 5 miles, limited by the max results that you want to bring back. So if you're going down I-55 in Illinois and you want to see caches that are only a mile from the route from I-55, you just put a mile from your route that you uploaded, And you'll only get caches that are up and down or up to 1 mile from the I-55. And then you also want to select the number of caches to include in the pocket query. The default is 100, just like any other pocket query you run, and it has a max of 500. And then you want to select the type of caches that you want, the container types. So if you want to do caches that are, you know, just standard and just regular size, so they're fairly easy to hit, you can select that. And then you have other filter options like you do on normal PQs. That I haven't found, I own, I don't own, I own, are available to all users, are available to members only, are not on my ignore list, are on my watch list, found in the last 7 days, have not been found, have travel bugs, updated in the last 7 days, is not active, and is active. Now, the last two, I suppose you're not going to want to go out and hunt ones that are not active, so unless you're going to do recovery containers, but I usually just select the ones that are active. That way I don't have to worry about the ones, especially if I'm going to a new area. I just select the ones that are active. That way I don't have to worry about ones that may have been temporarily disabled, or unless it's been temporarily disabled since the time I ran my PQ. But you just go ahead and say just ones that are active. So then what we can do after that is we select terrain and difficulty ratings. I usually like, especially if I'm doing one on a road on a route like this, I select ones that are fairly easy. Usually I know that I'm going to a really good cache area along my route. I don't want to, if I'm driving specific, I don't usually want to spend, you know, hours upon hours climbing a really steep hill just to get on my way to somewhere. I mean, you can if you want, but usually I like to keep them fairly easy. And then you do filter by date placed, just like you do on the other one. You can select the attributes to include or exclude. And that's a little bit tricky, but we've covered that already on our other previous podcasts. So if you're having issues with the attributes, go ahead and listen to the podcast that we did on pocket queries. And then select your output options, which are alternate email, send it as a GPX or LOC, and then zip it up. So with that, that's pretty much caching along a route. Daryl, did you have anything else to add up in as far as that goes?
No, it is pretty simple and easy to figure out once you're over that hurdle of how to get the route itself into geocaching.com. But it is kind of tricky, though, because remember that when you get these, you know, pocket queries back, not all of the caches that are in that route are in that pocket query are going to be accessible from your route without having to, you know, weave your way around and into a park or something. So make sure to read the cache descriptions before you try to hit those caches.
So next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about notifications and the notification system that GroundSpeak has in place. So join us next week for as we talk about notifications and some other general stuff. This weekend, I'm actually going to go to Chicago too. Daryl, I'm not doing a power trip, though. We're actually going to take my son up to our sons. I still take a little bit for me to remember that, you know, I call them sons now, not just sons, since I do now have two of them. But we're going to go up to the Shedd Aquarium, and we'll probably hit a few caches while we're there. Not too many, because we're going to be walking distance and stuff like that. So probably not too many, but we'll hit a few of them. But maybe we'll hit our 200 cache. We're only, I think, 5 away from that now. So we can hopefully go and get our 200th cache in Chicago. That'd be great. I would love that since I love Illinois. But what do you guys have for this next week, Daryl?
Well, we're going to be hitting the Amigo Fall Fun Day again this year. This time it's at the Proud Lake State Rec area on Saturday. We did a trip last year up to Traverse City to do it, and we actually covered that one for Ice and Rye. And then the one the year before that was actually our first event, and we did something for our podcaster on that one. This time, we're not going to be doing anything for anyone. We're just going to kind of sit back and enjoy the event for a change, not have to do any work. It will be very, very nice.
That will be nice. I know when you're, especially on events that I've hosted, it's a pain when you got to be conscious of, you know, everybody, like, other things, that you, other responsibilities. It'll be nice for you just to be able to go and relax and actually enjoy the event.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
With that, I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. If we have any, if there's any questions of anyone that's on the phone now, has any questions or comments they want to put in, go ahead and just say them now. Everyone should be unmuted. Does anyone have any questions or anything to talk about the caching along a route?
No, actually, Daryl kind of grabbed what I'd been typing in the forum this last week. We'd gone up to High Springs from where we were at along I-75, and there was a cache that was, according to the map, was right there on the interstate, which shocked me. Turned out it was on a bicycle bridge that crossed right over the interstate. No way of getting to it. Not from the interstate.
So what you're saying is you would definitely recommend looking at the cache pages before you go.
Definitely. I should have, and I didn't.
We all learn from experience. Anybody
yep.
else? Anybody else have any input?
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
Do you guys know of an easy way of adjusting the routes that Google Earth wants to create for you?
Ooh, that's a very good question.
That is a good question.
With the new version. But I know on Google Maps, it will actually allow you now to just click and drag and put in the what we used to call via points. But I think they're calling them additional points or additional waypoints in Google Maps. And I think that does work in the new Google Earth, though I haven't tried it.
I want to say it does, too, but it's not easy, though. I mean, if you want to create a whole new route, like say if it's got you going back roads and you want to go main roads, it's not really – from what I know, it's not really easy because you'd have to click and drag a lot of different points. Unless, Daryl, you know some other way to do that. Is there a way to adjust, like, to tell it to use main highways or to use back roads? Or I know, like, in Microsoft Streets and Trips, you can do that. Is in Google Earth, is there an easy way to do that?
As far as I know, Google Earth is a little bit oversimplified, and it just has the avoid toll roads, avoid dirt roads options. It doesn't have the vast array of selections that most of the other nav tools have. And this is one of the reasons why you might be better off using, Streets and Trips, I think, does export in a GPX file. Most of them now are supporting the KML file.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, as long as you can get it in a GPX or a KML file, you can pretty much upload it. Just make sure it's a route and not a track, because the tracks, as far as I know, are not supported in the GC route engine yet. I know they hadn't been when I first tried it I guess it was about a year ago now. Oh, it would have to be, because that's about when I did the first thing on caches along a route for Ice and Rye, was during that Fall Fun Day.
Geek Boy, you say you split them up into three different KML files. Why do you split them up?
I actually will set basically an interim waypoint and do a route from one point to the next, and so I can force the route along certain directions, so I can force it to go a different way. Masco 32 had said in the forums here that are in the chat that's what he does as well, and I'm like, yeah, I was just hoping to find a better way of doing it.
Yeah. Well, the advantage, too, to having the three separate route files is also that you can get around the limits of distance and the number of caches, because once you hit that 500 limit, you can't have any more caches in your pocket query.
Right.
And some of these corridors are quite saturated. Others are not, so you don't have to worry about it as much. But you are also limited to, I believe it's 5 pocket queries a day. So that can get a little tedious right there.
Yes, it can. And I've noticed the delays are creeping back in pocket queries again.
Oh, absolutely. I've been getting all kinds of times now. I have the one pocket query that runs each day, and that will come in any time from, I think, about 8 o'clock in the morning to, I've even had it come in now at about 6 or 7 at night. So it's all over the weekend.
Now, do you guys normally, how far off of the trail do you normally set your caches? Like, the ones that I've tested with, I've played around with it, and I've done it a few times, but never like on major trips. How far like would you set the caches? Moscow says 0.5 miles. What about the rest of you guys?
Well, it really depends on what I'm doing. If I'm just looking to go from point A to point B and hit a few rest area caches on the way, You have a few service area caches. I'll do it max a mile. But like on this weekend, or the 2 weekends ago, actually, when we went out to Chicago, we actually set it for the maximum of 2 miles to try to get the most caches we could, so that if we saw a pocket of caches, like Michigan City, for instance, had a huge pocket of caches we hit. You know, we stopped in Michigan City, did a whole bunch of caches, got off for a while, did the lunch thing, and then got back on and got back on our way.
Mm-hmm. All right,
I do a lot of the same thing. I'll depending upon where I'm going, if it's a ways away and I've got a short time to get there, I'll go with the half mile. If I've got time to take my time on it, I'll set mine out a little bit longer, so I'll go for some that are further off the route than when I'm in a rush.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess too that, I mean, if you set it out more, doesn't mean you have to get those caches. I mean, you'll see them on your GPS. You can see where they're at from where you're at. So, I mean, it just means that you have to maybe hit more, have a couple different KML files to get the max caches. But, I mean, if you set it out, you know, 2 miles or 3 miles, there may be a good one that you can say hi. Or say hi? I'm sorry, Daryl, I just read the chat and I read it out loud. Hi. The chat was that their cat says hi. So, I'm totally lost my thought now. Anyways, you can, don't have to hit your caches.
Andy, while he's talking.
Yeah, I think that's a sign that we should probably stop recording now. So, anyways, guys, I want to say thanks again for joining us this week. We'll be doing this again next week, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday. And we'll be talking a little bit about the notification system and anything else that you guys may want. Go ahead and drop us an email at xpunkx@geocachingpodcast.info. And that's also geocachingpodcast.info is where you'll find all of our feeds and all of the show notes and stuff like that. And all the stuff that we've talked about and the different links. So go ahead and make sure you hit that up. I want to also remind you, too, that we have a Twitter account. If you want to get notifications and reminded that, you know, what's going on with the podcast, go ahead and subscribe to the Twitter name GC Podcast, and there's different things that I set out there and reminders and stuff. So with that, guys, thanks for joining us. Have a good week and go get your caches.